Failure is not an option.
What difference at this point does it make?
Nobody said it was going to be fun.
This is Real Talk, a fearless, poignant, and intrepid show where truth speaks louder than words. This is Real Talk with your host, Audrey Russo.
The shame, not of this world, so we live on the run. We keep our eyes set, on what is to come.
It happened before. It will happen again. It's just a question of when.
Time's a luxury we don't have.
Hey, get her done. Hey, this is Larry the Cable Guy, and I'll tell you what. When I get my news, I get it from Real Talk from Audrey Russo. Yeah, buddy. Get her done.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. Now, what is the most persecuted people group on the planet? No, it's not Muslims, but rather Christians under Muslim persecution. We're going to find out more about this with my next guest. For my new listeners, Raymond Ibrahim has served as an Arabic language and regional specialist at the Near East section of the Library of Congress and as associate director of the Middle East Forum. He has also served as a CBN news analyst and contributor. Among other distinguished positions, Raymond is a Shulman Fellow at the David Horowitz Freedom Center. He's also been a guest lecturer at universities and governmental agencies, and he's testified before Congress regarding the abstract failures that govern American dialogue concerning Islam. He's also an author of several books, including The Al-Qaeda Reader and his most recent, Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome back to Raymond Ibrahim. Welcome back, Raymond.
Hi, Audrey. Haven't had such a good welcome since last time I spoke to you.
Well, it's good. I'm glad. Well, it's great to have you back with us, really.
Thanks.
We're going to jump right into this discussion. Well, according to Open Doors and its annual rankings, 2016 was the worst year yet for the most persecuted people on the planet, Christians. So, Raymond, can you share some of the most significant findings in that report?
Sure. Some of them are actually pretty consistent with previous years. So you mentioned the top 50. Out of the 50, 40 of them are actually because of Islamic extremism, or as Open Doors describes it, the words Islamic extremism is behind it. It could be from governmental regimes such as in Iran or Saudi Arabia. It could just be the general populace. It could be, you know, terrorists and so forth. And then the top 10 worst nations where, you know, the persecution is just horrific, 9 are Islamic nations. And then top 21, of course, 18, where Christians experience, again, amongst the worst persecution, 18 are Muslim. 1,329 churches were either attacked, damaged, or destroyed just in that, just in last year alone, mostly in Muslim nations. The nation of Somalia, which was always bad, it's always been in the top 10, I think usually it's like 9 or so, actually moved up to the number 2 worst spot. And there it's basically such that if someone just finds that you are a practicing Christian, you're instantly executed. Nigeria has probably seen the most slaughter of Christians. And in 2016, it's gone up by 62%. I do these reports every month, and most of the slaughter of Christians actually comes from Nigeria. It could easily be hundreds per month.
Wow.
And then the nation where the most violent and sexual attacks on Christians takes place, Pakistan, which is, of course, Muslim majority. The word Pakistan means, you know, the land of the pure, rose to the number four worst spot. So those are, you know, amongst some of the, I think, pertinent findings of the 2016 year in persecution.
Wow, that's incredible. Raymond, in a recent article, you stated a direct correlation exists between Western ignorance of history and Western ignorance of Islam's troublesome doctrines. Can you expound on that for us?
Sure. I wrote that in the context of the concept of Islamophobia. And specifically, one Reza Aslan, who's an Islamic apologist, came up and he made the statement. I don't know where he was. He was speaking somewhere. I think he talks for CNN and he's a representative for it. But he made this statement that Islamophobia was essentially created in 2014 by what he termed a bunch of clowns. And what he means by that, of course, is just writers and activists who are, you know, distorting the image of Islam just to make people dislike it. And so my point was that, you know, for me to even hear something like that is beyond surreal because I'm acquainted with history. And I think that he can get away with such assertions because a lot of people today are just not. And so if you look at history, you will find that since the dawn of Islam, since literally day one of Muhammad, up until, you know, just very recently, I mean, you know, well into the 20th century, Christians and non-Christians, non-Muslims in general, had views of Islam that would make, you know, the most quote-unquote Islamophobic person of today blush. So, you know, Islam was just, you know, Muhammad was the Antichrist, he was a pervert, he was a pedophiler, he was a murderer, he was a liar. This appears all throughout the writings of Christians, including some of the most, you know, venerated in, you know, the Western tradition. So, for example, you know, people are very fond of someone like Winston Churchill. He's a hero of World War II and so forth. But most people are not aware that he said things like, how dreadful are the curses which Islam lays on its followers, besides the fanatical frenzy, which is as dangerous as hydrophobia in a dog. There is this fearful fatalistic apathy, and he goes on and on. And, you know, how miserable life is wherever the followers of the prophet rule or live. Again, I'm quoting him. Right. And, you know, this is just Marco Polo, you know, another, you know, people that you just are acquainted with from, you know, classrooms when you were young and you never thought had anything to do with Islam. You come to find out that they also just constantly, you know, talk about it in the same way that so-called Islamophobes today are talking about it. So the point is, how can anyone say that Islamophobia, quote unquote, just came into being recently and was fabricated and manufactured, when if you know history, you know that everything so-called Islamophobes are saying today has been said by the mainstream of Islam for literally almost 14 centuries. And, you know, how could all that be wrong and manufactured?
Right, exactly. And you also quoted, which, first of all, the Marco Polo thing caught me off guard because I would expect Alexis de Tocqueville and Winston Churchill. Also, Theophanes and Thomas Aquinas.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Thomas Aquinas. I have it in front of me, and I can, you know, so here's Theophanes. And, you know, we owe a lot to him. He's a Byzantine chronicler, and we know a lot to him about the history of the 7th and 6th century, which is basically when Islam came on the scene. He died in the year 818. So you can see that's very close to the time of Muhammad, who supposedly died at 632. He writes this. And I'm quoting now, he, Muhammad, taught those who gave ear to him that the one slaying the enemy or being slain by the enemy entered into paradise. And this, of course, is Quran 9111, where it says, you know, he who kills or is killed enters paradise. And I continue, this is Theophanes. And he said paradise was carnal and sensual, orgies of eating, drinking, and women. And there was a river of wine, and the women were of another sort, and the duration of sex greatly prolonged, and its pleasure long enduring, and all sorts of other foolishness and nonsense. Now, I mean, these are the sorts of things that so-called Islamophobes are saying today, you know, and so, you know, someone might want you to think that, well, it's just these are stereotypes that people like Theophanes created and, you know, his followers till today are quoting them. Or you can look at it more as in, well, he based this on what the Quran says and on the biography of Muhammad, which do make clear all this disparaging stuff that he said.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah, you know, I don't know if you had heard it. It just came to mind when you were talking about this, that Zuhdi Jasser, who calls himself a moderate Muslim, is now, to me, he just exposed himself because now he calls people like Robert Spencer and Pamela Geller alt jihadists for what they say about Islam.
Old or alt?
Alt, like, yeah, like oh, yeah, alt, yeah, right? Yeah, yeah, alt. Yeah. In other
like
words, they call
right.
Right, exactly, yeah. Yeah. Which is, to me, that's interesting. It's all because, yeah, of course, they're telling the truth, as you do, about yeah, Islam. It's a shame.
But, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Zuhdi Jasser, you know, he's one of these guys. I don't know what's in his heart, what he really believes, but right, he's not doing anyone a service, any non-Muslim American a service, when he comes up and on the one hand says, yes, there's Islamists. Yes, they do this. Yes, they do that. But Islam can be peaceful and I'm a good representative, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. The thing is, you know, he'd have more credibility to me if his audience was actually Muslims. It does us no service when he tells us this because, well, we're not Muslims in the first place. And so all of this doesn't matter. But you come to find out in the Islamic world and amongst Muslims, he has zero impact. And so if anything, he sort of, you know, all he does is make people drop their guard and think that he is somehow representative of greater Islam.
Right, right, exactly. You know, at the beginning of Holy Week, Islamic suicide bombers attacked, of course, many listeners know, but not all, two Coptic Christian churches packed with worshipers. The result, 50 dead and 130 wounded. Now, Raymond, of course, this was horrific, but are you surprised by this? And if not, why?
I'm not surprised by this at all. For starters, churches in Egypt, you know, we can talk about history and they've been bombed, I mean, burned. This is before bombs all throughout centuries. And one caliph in the 11th century, who's known as the Mad Caliph Al-Hakim, according to one very authoritative Muslim historian or chronicler named Al-Makrizi, burned down 30,000 churches in Egypt and Syria. And this is, of course, at a time when that area was still heavily Christian population. So you know, in the context of historical continuity, it's not at all shocking. But moving up to the modern era, well, you know, right before this, the two bombings you mentioned on Palm Sunday, 1 week before Easter Sunday, less than a month before that, another church was bombed. And I think that left something like 27 people dead. And it was almost right before Christmas. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there has been the church that was bombed in 2001. Coptic Church during Christmas Eve celebrations. I think that also left something like close to 30 people dead and, you know, many wounded and so forth. So it's not at all surprising. And the justification that the terrorists, the Islamic State, or whoever is behind it give, this last one I think is interesting, the Easter one, because, and I think most people don't know this, for not just in Egypt. So let's say 2015, the year before, 2016, the year before the Easter of last year in Pakistan, that Easter day, Christians were attacked. And I think something like, I want to say like 70 people died, mostly women and children, again, on Easter Sunday. In Nigeria, as you know, I was mentioning the slaughter that goes on there. Almost every single Easter, I read about this church bombed, and, you know, anywhere from 50 to 150 people killed. And a lot of this animus, I think, comes out during Easter, because most people aren't aware that of all Christian holidays, that's the most one that is offensive to Islam. Because unlike, for example, Christmas, well, Muslims, you know, they claim Jesus or Isa as their prophet. And they actually in the Quran say he was born of a virgin. So Christmas is not so bad. But Easter, Easter says that Christ was killed. And the Quran says he wasn't. Someone that looked like him was killed, that he was buried and resurrected. And that he was crucified. All these three things are vehemently denied by Islam. And also Easter is probably the most symbolic Christian holiday that, you know, touches on the divinity of Christ or the Trinity, which is especially anathema to Islam, which believes in Tawheed, or, you know, this kind of, you know, strict monotheism where you can't have a trinity and so forth. And you see this in their fatwas. So you'll, there's a fatwa by the Muslim Brotherhood which says, yeah, you can be nice to Christians during Christmas, but not on Easter, because that's definitely the worst holiday. So I think that, you know, that's another little known aspect in the West, is also fuels the hostility that you see almost every, actually every single Easter holiday around the world.
Right. So there's really basically no difference, or they haven't seen much of a difference under Sisi?
Well, you know, Sisi, it's a really complicated situation. Sisi, I credit him for really saying a lot of stuff and putting his neck on the line. Right. And, you know, but he's always, as any Muslim reformer, he's kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, because if he pushes it too much, then he becomes an apostate. In fact, he already is, to many of the supporters of the Muslim Brotherhood and, of course, the Salafis, just because he is, he speaks well of Christians and he's called for the reformation of Islam and all this sort of thing. So if he does it too far, then more, you know, more Muslims in Egypt will go against him. So it's always a fine line, but I credit him with at least standing in front of Al-Azhar, the most important institution arguably in the world, but definitely in Egypt, and calling on them to do something to reform Islam. And he pointed out in 2015, January 1st, that there's a problem in our texts. It's creating, you know, chaos. It's creating, it's victimizing non-Muslims, etc. We need to do something. And just recently, the head of Al-Azhar, they asked him about it, and you know, about reforming, and he just laughed. He said, "Reform what? That's not. We don't reform. We just spell out Islam the way it has to be spelled out, the way our learned elders taught us, and so forth." Which, as many critics have pointed out, means Al-Azhar is still teaching everything that even that ISIS is doing. Al-Azhar has books that talks about burning infidels alive, that talks about eating infidels alive, that talks about how churches can't exist, how Christians and Jews have to be humbled and pay jizya. All this is still being taught, not just in Al-Azhar, but in other schools. And so that's really the problem with Egypt. You got, on the one hand, someone who wants to reform, and then on the other hand, you got this culture which is heavily informed by traditional Islamic teaching, and the two are sort of at odds. And it's to push the Islamic teachings out, it instantly makes one an apostate. And so that's why it's such a, you know, fuzzy line.
Yeah. Has Sisi done anything following that Palm Sunday attack?
Well, last I heard, he had called for a state of emergency. You know, he said, we're going to root out terrorism. And a lot of it, I think, is in the Sinai, because right before that, also, a lot of several cops in the Sinai area were actually displaced, I think hundreds of them, because supposed ISIS members or sympathizers burned some of them alive, murdered some of them in cold blood. They would literally walk in broad daylight and shoot them in their stores or in the streets, kidnap children, Christian children, from off the streets, and no one does anything. So it's a mess. That's what you have to understand. I mean, someone like Sisi, he's got his work cut out for him.
Yeah, he certainly does.
You know, and again, but I'm not necessarily saying that he's 100% sincere. I don't know. I just know it's not that easy to do what he and others want to do.
Is he better than Mubarak?
Well, you know, I mean, on the one hand, you can look at the attacks, and there's definitely, it seems, more attacks now under Sisi, but one can also interpret that as meaning that the Islamists who hate him are doing this intentionally to essentially jeopardize his rule, make him look bad in public around the world and so forth, you know, because obviously these attacks also have a political agenda. They're not just about hate, even though that is the essence of it. Because the guy who walks in the church and blows himself up, he doesn't have a political agenda. He was just born to hate Christians and churches and so forth.
Right.
But also, you know, as the decades have gone by, just the entire Islamic world has become more radical in general. Mm-hmm. So even if they were this, even if Sisi was president, you know, in the 1980s, like Mubarak was, I'm sure it wouldn't be as bad as it is today.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Concerning the recent church bombing, are these random, or is it a command or requirement to commit this kind of act?
Well, you know, that's the thing. You know, every time there's a bombing or an attack, we're told, well, it's ISIS. ISIS claimed it. And oftentimes ISIS does claim it. Mm-hmm. But what I don't like about that kind of thinking is it really, it it just kind of localizes it into one professional so-called terrorist group, which, as we all know, has nothing to do with Islam, so we're told. But you know, the rank and file, like I said, the guy who goes in there, with dynamite wrapped around him and kills himself, this guy is honestly 100% believes what he's doing, which is murdering innocent lives, but because they're Christians, is such a wonderful thing that he's willing to die for it, because he's going to go to the highest levels of heaven. So yeah, there's a command structure, especially for these more spectacular attacks, like the recent one. But the rank and file, the people who actually do it, they're just from the general populace of Egypt. And the same mentality we often hear, for instance, in Egypt, there's a rumor that a Christian wants to build a church, or Christians want to build a church, or they don't have a church, so now they're praying inside someone's home. And what happens? Muslims in that area riot, they destroy, the house of where supposedly people are meeting and worshiping, and so forth. So the point is, that same mentality, you just take it up a few more notches, and it becomes the guy who goes and bombs himself away. And you may say he's a professional terrorist, but it's that same mentality that permeates the entire society, which you see all the time, that is really the genesis of the hate.
Right. Yeah. We've heard about Christian persecution, of course, in the Middle East and Africa, but I understand that's also occurring in the Philippines. Am I correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's
occurring every. I mean, that's the thing. You often hear about it, and a lot of people think it's happening where ISIS is. Or it's happening, the Arab world is, or the African world. But you come to find out, wherever there is Islam, it's not even just the Islamic world. It's now there's Christian persecution in Europe, literally. Churches get attacked and ransacked. Statues of Jesus and Mary get beheaded. Christians themselves get attacked and killed just because they are Christian. These reports that I write, every month I write them, there's now increasingly more anecdotes straight from Europe, where Muslims are a minority, and yet because they are a growing minority, the same sorts of animus and violence that they inflict on Christians in the Muslim world is coming with them as well. But sure, Philippines, Indonesia, Malaysia and Indonesia, we were always told are the paradigms of moderate Islam. And yet the same sorts of things are happening right there. Christians are being butchered. Apostates are being killed. Yeah. Cries of blasphemy against Christians because they said the wrong thing about Islam, and demands for their death is happening in Malaysia, Indonesia, Philippines. And to me, that's always been one of the greatest eye openers, because you can't now say, well, it's an Arab thing, or it's a Persian thing, or it's a cultural thing. No, this is something that manifests itself amongst all these different societies that speak different languages and have different cultures, different governments, and different races, the way they look, black, Asian, Arab, Iranian, Turkish, Central Asian, and so forth. So what binds them together? And obviously the only thing that can explain these same patterns of persecution against Christians and so-called infidels must be Islam.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, we know, especially in Europe, because of the Muslim migration, why it's growing there. But do you know if it's growing in the Philippines?
In the Philippines, it's growing everywhere. I mean, there isn't an area, the area that only saw 5% persecution a year ago is now seeing 8%. And so Philippines follows that same pattern. And all of this is because of the overall radicalization or resurgence of Islam, all around the world. Right. I can actually, if you have a second, I can look up the Philippines and tell you their ranking.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, we can keep talking while I do that, but, go ahead.
I don't know if it's from what they call if I'm correct, Hijra or the civilizational jihad, maybe that's what the Muslim migration is, but elsewhere it's really from just populating having children is, basically
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Yeah. The baby jihad.
Yeah, the baby.
That's what I call it.
Yeah, that's good. That's exactly it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you have that happening here. And of course you are having that in Europe, but of course the babies are not the ones yet that are, right, that are raping, that are, they're having going on in Norway, Denmark, but the Philippines, yeah, of course being disconnected from there, but of course they're, I guess they're closer to the what? The largest the country with the largest Muslim population. That's Indonesia. Am I correct?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the one, and that one's definitely on the list. I can tell you, you know, I'm looking at right now the last report I wrote about Muslim persecution. By the way, I've been writing these since 2011, so I got something like 70 monthly reports.
Wow.
When I first started them, I thought to myself, what am I going to do when a month comes and there's nothing to write? And that has never happened. It's always been dozens and dozens, and they've grown and grown and grown in number to the point that I don't even, you know, put in all the stuff that I find anymore. But in the last report I had published by the Gatestone Institute, here's an anecdote from the Philippines. I'll read it to you real quickly. I wrote, according to a January 12 report, a former Muslim convert to Christianity was found slaughtered in his home by local Muslims for apostatizing from Islam. During his time as a Muslim, he was hostile to Christianity. When he found out that a Christian boy was courting his daughter and that they wanted to get married, he began to hurl stones at the boy's father, who was a pastor. Later, when even death threats failed to separate the couple, and after securing a large dowry from the Christian family, he agreed to the marriage. Then during the church ceremony, which was conducted by the bridegroom's father, who he used to stone, the Muslim man was struck by what he heard. That's what the report said, to the point that he converted to Christianity, left the town to avoid persecution, and then study the Bible. But then he returned home to visit his family, and he was found dead, killed by Muslims for apostatizing from Islam. Wow. That's the Philippines. This is something you would expect to hear from ISIS-controlled territory, right?
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I'm kind of shocked by that because I lost sight for a second that you meant the Philippines and you said the Philippines, and I'm going, whoa.
Yeah.
I guess they must be misunderstanders of
like every other Muslim terrorist. Yeah, right. For 1400 years, still misunderstanding Islam. Yeah.
Exactly. Unfortunately, you know, that you have also the help of, you know, in Western countries, you have the help of the, these Islamic jihadists have the help of the media and, yeah, you know, the government. And like you have here with the Fresno, the Fresno shooter, you know, what's his name? Corey, yeah, Ali Mohammed, who apparently yelled Allahu Akbar and while he was killing the three people. And now the law enforcement media just, they're distancing it.
They
from
want to
Islam.
Bury that.
Now
it's a racial thing, you know, and because of course racial, that, you know, that's more intelligible. You know, he's apparently a frustrated, angry black man lashing out, but they just want to keep that Allah Akbar thing buried because once again, that draws a spotlight on another kind of hostility and supremacism that's slowly growing in this country, just like it is everywhere else around the world, like I was saying.
Yeah, I call the leftist media, you know, Islam's little helper monkeys.
Yeah.
But So Raymond, can you tell us where can the listeners follow and support your excellent work and purchase your books, including Crucified Again?
Yeah, the best place is my website, which is just my first and last name.com, Raymond Ibrahim.com, RaymondIbrahim. And all my articles appear there, and there's links to my books that go to Amazon, and there's also a donate button for whoever would like to support the work I do.
Excellent. And of course, I will have those links in my after show, which is now on the live show page. Just go to AudreyRusso.com, click on the On Air button, and right under the show description, you'll find the links and info that Raymond just shared. Thanks so much, Raymond, for sharing all of that information, helping us understand it. Will you join us again on the show? Yes?
Sure. I look forward to it, Audrey. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Until then, may God bless you, your work, and may God save America. Bye for now.